good evening or good morning.
Recording in progress.
Wherever you are. What a beautiful day. Nice to see you all. The wind outside is really refreshing. Every time I took a breath, I was thinking, I kind of could be out there and take a fresh breath. The air in here is not nearly as fresh as it seems like it is out there. And all the trees are rustling. Beautiful. Steve is here.
Yeah,
that's good, right? Yes, and Sue is here. Well, that's nothing new though. Sue was often here, but Steve was down. Everybody's here. Yeah, we can cheer for everybody. But you know, Steve was in the was ill, right? He had a heart attack, right? So he's better now. And John Murray is in the hospital with heart troubles, you've heard, I guess. And he feels all right, but Tracy was to see him today and said that he feels okay, but they still haven't gotten to the bottom of exactly what it is that's going on. It's some kind of electrical malfunctioning. Anyway, that's what happens when you have a heart, right? But we're glad that everybody is doing pretty well. Nobody's in too bad shape, at least in our immediate vicinity. So that's a blessing. And I think that I see Jean and Neil on the screen, and they're going down to, I guess you're gonna leave somewhere in the middle of the seminar or something to go down to Palo Alto or are you there already? Oh, you went down early, oh, good plan. Yeah, so they're going down to, they're in Mountain View actually, because tonight they're gonna start a precepts class down there. Apparently they've never had a precepts class in Mountain View, and we have this great precepts class, I guess. Not that I know anything about it, but somebody, whoever made this precepts class, did a great job, and we had a really good precepts class. And so they're gonna share it with the folks at Conondo, and they're all excited about it down at Conondo, and I'm gonna go down there on Saturday and probably talk about precepts down there. We're having an all-day sit down there on Saturday. So everybody is going along doing what we're doing. And what else would you do? So what we're doing tonight is we have more benefactors to talk about. And tonight I want to talk about benefactors numbers 38 and 39. Two more in the long list of night goddesses. And like I said, I believe that the idea is that the night goddesses are all associated with the place where the Buddha was awakened, which is a powerful place. And so these two night goddesses, number 38 and 39, are Sarva Jaga Drakshapra Nidana Virya Prava and Sutejo Mandala Ratishri. Those are the two we're going to talk about tonight. And before I try to read some from their chapters, I want to just highlight three words or three ideas that come up in studying their stories. I want to just say a little word about these three things, three ideas. Remember we said at the beginning of the seminar that this is an unusual text. It's a visionary text that is meant to be chanted and experienced, letting the language and the imagery wash over you, more like an extended poem or like maybe being at the opera, than a religious text of teachings that you're supposed to think about and put into practice. So the idea of the sutra is that in experiencing it one way or the other, you're going to imaginatively place yourself in the scene, in the vast world of the sutra with its basically celebratory vision of the whole cosmos as a living Buddha land. So I'm going to try in my reading tonight to read it that way, to emphasize, to almost chant it in places. And besides my reading, I hope it should work out that we have time for, I think this is the right list, Suzanne, Anne-Laure, Michael, Marianne, and James have all said that they were going to read. James maybe no, but the others, yes. So you all responded and said you were about to do it, so we'll see what happens. Okay, so the three words I wanted to bring up. First word is communality. That appears in the 38th benefactor. When he first sees Sarva Jaga Draksha Prandidana Virya Prava, Sudana bows to her, and immediately he attains 10 purities of thought. And when he attains these 10 purities of thought, he then instantly attains communality with the goddess and all enlightening beings. And then the various forms of this communality are described in many, many pages. And that's the part that I wanted to read. So what is communality? I guess it means here something like complete identity with, merging with, solidarity with, or even like melting into. And this caught my eye, and I thought about it, and I thought, yes, you know what, that really feels like something that we experience in our practice, that we really do have a felt sense of this as we go on in practice. We go on for, you know, all these years of sitting and contemplating the teachings, and they can't help but be in our minds and hearts a lot of the time when we're living. And we start feeling our way into our lives from the place of the sitting and the teachings and our reflections on them. And I think it really does. And if you think about this, you will probably say, yeah, that sounds right. You soften. You start to soften quite a bit. And when you soften, you just sort of like melt into things, rather than hold them at arm's length. You merge with things rather than try to organize them. And that's what it feels like, communality. We become less ourselves and more the things around us. In any moment, we feel less like a person apart as against a bitter world, and more like we are in a total situation in which we find ourselves. And there is no really boundary or limit within that situation. And insofar as reality itself is liberative, which the sutra is definitely saying that it is, then we really feel in our body and in our mind a sense of communality with all enlightening beings. And so that communality is essentially bright and awakened. The second word that comes up in this section, and again I'll read a passage that emphasizes this word, is the word appearance. The goddess, we learn, has the capacity to appear in many ways. And all of her different kinds of appearances are described in a very long passage that I hope I can read. And this too struck me as I was reading it and contemplating it, because it also seems to be something really noticeable in our practice. I mean, in ordinary life, it seems like there are real things, hard and fast things, that impinge. But as you go on, you know, practicing and softening in the way I was just saying, you begin to see that there really aren't any things. There really isn't anything that's impinging, you know, the impinging and the things, you're making them up in some fundamental way. Because there's only a kind of a flow in which things are appearing and disappearing and flowing all the time. Things are flashing in and out all the time. And then you find that you have a much lighter hold on your experience. And you realize that things appear and disappear, and you don't have to understand them. And you don't have to control them. You don't have to make them be the way you think they should be. And this means not only the world around you, but your own self, well, within you, and other people in your life. Things just appear. And because they just appear, they are so remarkable, so amazing, and you appreciate them so much. And the question of what things are or how they are isn't important, but that they appear is so marvelous. You know, it's such a, wow, you know, why should there be anything? But look at all of this stuff in its incredible variety. Bodhisattvas dwell in the realm of appearances. And this is why they love without any limit and without any encumbrance. It's the source of their great energy and of their enthusiasm, because everything is an appearance, a gift, a miracle, and every appearance is just for the moment and is all-inclusive and perfect in that moment as it disappears. And that's what the sutra keeps telling us over and over again. And the third word is light. And it reminds me when John Murray was Shusoh some time ago, I think that's when it was, we read this great book by Dale Wright. Dale Wright is one of my favorite people and one of my favorite Buddhist authors. He's so great, you know. He's so profound and down to earth at the same time. And he had a book called What is Buddhist Enlightenment? And we read that book very closely for the whole of the practice period. And we talked about the word enlightenment, and we've noticed that the word enlightenment is actually it's a Western word. The Buddhist word, and of course there's many words for enlightenment in the Buddhist tradition, but I don't think any of them are the equivalent of the word, English word, enlightenment. Buddha doesn't mean enlightened one, it means literally the awakened one. Bodhi is awakening. And nirvana doesn't mean enlightenment, it means to blow out, like you blow out a candle. It's the opposite of enlightenment, right? It's to blow something out, meaning return, take away the heat and the passion and return to coolness. Nirvana is associated with coolness, the opposite of light almost. So Buddha awakens from the dream of suffering. Buddha doesn't shine light into the darkness. But in the Western tradition, we have the Enlightenment period, right? It's a period of history. That's why we have the word enlightenment to translate these Buddhist words. Because in light, in the West, light is knowledge and darkness is ignorance. So after the Dark Ages comes the Enlightenment period, the rational scientific period, the period of knowing the world beyond the darkness of superstition and fear and so on. Dogen uses words like that translate roughly as realization. He uses that word a lot. And or that same word could be translated, Shohaku Okamura uses the word verification. So realization meaning to make real, and verification to make true. But none of these words really have the idea of light in them until you get to the Avatamsaka Sutra. The Avatamsaka Sutra is bathed in light. It's all light all over the place. And as we will see when we read some stuff from the night goddess Sujato Mandala Ratishri, who is telling the story of the Buddha's birth, and he is born, you know, suffused with light, and the whole world lights up with his light. So the whole sutra is a light-filled sutra. And light, I mean light, actual light, physical light, if light is physical, I guess it is so cosmic. Light itself, right? The actual light is so cosmic. I guess it's like a constant in the universe. The speed of light is somehow like an important, I don't know anything about, you know, physics or anything, but the speed of light is some sort of fundamental quantity in the universe. And light is everything, you know. Can you imagine the how could there be a universe without light? Light pervades the universe, and it floods our hearts and our minds. It's the source of everything. Whereas early Buddhism, and also Zen too, I think, stylistically, is very practical. You know, really the most important issue that we're always concerned about is how to awaken to things as they really are, so as to end suffering and be able to live with ease in a difficult world. But this is not the Avatamsaka Sutra, right? The Avatamsaka Sutra is not, it's like, whoa, that's way far away from the Avatamsaka Sutra world. It's a cosmic world filled with light, endless space. Anyway, I remember in the past, there's some really good books by, popular books, I mean, like general audience books by physicists that I read in the past about light, and it's just unbelievable to read and understand whatever you can understand about light, but not now. I'll go to the sutra now. So. Well, I think, I don't know the page number, but you go by the name of the teacher. So it's the 38th teacher. Oh yeah, here we go. 1364. Everybody, Laura knows. It's page 1364 in the online text.
Which is the same as the big version.
Yeah, yeah. So Sudhana went to the night goddess, Sarvajaga Drakshapra Nidana Virya Prabha. And her body was covered with a net of jewels reflecting the principles of the cosmos. She appeared to sentient beings according to their mentalities. So every sentient being saw a different version of her. She manifested her own body in forms like those of all beings. And her body appeared to be present everywhere. Seeing her, Sudhana bowed. And finally, rising from the ground in a reverential attitude, Sudhana gazed at the body of the night goddess, and as he did so, he attained 10 purities of thought, whereby he gained communality with all spiritual friends. What are those 10? He thought of spiritual friends as his own mind, to associate with them in all situations in the effort to attain omniscience. He thought of them as the pure essence of the development of his own actions, to accomplish the attainment of extensive roots of goodness to please spiritual friends. He thought of them as adorning the practice of enlightening beings, to associate with them in carrying out adornment by all spiritual vows. He thought of them as bringing him to all aspects of Buddhahood, to practice the paths taught by all spiritual friends. He thought of them as the state of comfort, to manifest the abode of the supreme state of the realm of all Buddhas. He thought of them as the one way of emancipation, to purify the practice of the commitment of emancipation by the vehicle of universal good. He thought of them as oceans of virtues of omniscience, to increase the production of all good qualities. He thought of them as fulfilling, increasing, and preserving all consummate good, to increase the force of energetic effort for total knowledge of complete enlightenment. He thought of them as fulfilling all roots of goodness, to fulfill the aspirations of all beings. He thought of spiritual friends as fulfillers of all aims, to establish the mastery of all acts of enlightening beings. He attained these 10 purities of thought, whereby he attained communality with the night goddess and enlightening beings as numerous as atoms in a Buddha land. That is, he attained communality of recollection in remembering all Buddhas of all times and places, communality of intellect in unconfused ascertainment of the principles of the oceans of all truth, communality of course in familiarity with the principles of clear distinction following the courses of the teachings of all Buddhas, communality of enlightenment so as to realize the ocean of all principles of all times by space-like awareness, communality of purity of faculties so as to realize the knowledge of the ocean of faculties of all enlightening beings, communality of mental purity so as to accomplish the path of adornment, achieving the virtues of the path of enlightening beings adorned by the protection and care of living beings in all ways, communality of sphere so as to attain the scope of the sphere of knowledge of those who have arrived at thusness, communality of following principles so as to gain the light of the path of every entry into the ocean of principles of complete omniscience, communality of comprehension of meaning so as to attain comprehension of knowledge of the nature of all things, communality of spiritual abode so as to shatter the mountains of all obstructions, communality of purity of the physical body so as to attain physical purity resplendent with the marks and embellishments of greatness, appearing to sentient beings variously according to their dispositions, communality of power so as to increase focus on omniscience in which all powers of enlightening beings are consummated, communality and expertise in all spiritual methods so as to make the mind clear as space, communality of energy so as to be capable of tireless perseverance in the enlightening practice through all ages, communality of eloquence so as to illumine unobstructed knowledge of all things, communality of insuperability so as to purify the body beyond all worldlings, communality of noble-minded, non-depressive, intrepid speech for purity of good relations with all groups, communality of voice for enunciation of all truths, communality of purity of articulation in respect to the myriad principles of conventions of expressions of the languages of all beings, communality of purity of virtue in respect to purities of accomplishment of virtues taught by the Buddhas, communality of harmonizing with the tradition of principles and actions of Buddhas for purity of consequences of blameless action, communality of devotion to truth so as to turn the wheels of teaching of all Buddhas who appear in the world, communality of religious practice so as to dwell in the knowledge of the realm of all Buddhas, communality of great kindness so as to pervade the ocean of all beings in every moment with the various aspects of kindness, communality of entry into the ocean of great compassion so as to rain teachings for the salvation of all beings, skipping a whole bunch, communality of mindfulness of all points to remember, communality of conduct of enlightening beings, continuing to perform the tasks of enlightening beings through all times, communality of pure faith to expand the ocean of energies of joy of devotion to infinite enlightened knowledge. I'm on the next page toward the bottom. That's where I am. My 5, 6, 7 lines from the bottom. Communality of pure faith to expand the ocean of energy of joy of devotion to infinite enlightened knowledge, communality of destruction of all obstructions to enlightenment, communality of non-regressing knowledge to produce endless stores of enlightened knowledge, communality of emergence at appropriate times to guide all sentient beings to full development, communality of abode on the ways to omniscience, communality of sphere, entering the sphere of the majesty of the design of the cosmos, and on. In the next paragraph, thus did Sudana, by attainment of 10 purities of thought while gazing at the night goddess, gain communality with the night goddess in as many such ways as atoms in a Buddha land. And then he spoke to her about a page of verses that I'm going to skip. Having spoken these verses, Sudana said to the night goddess, "You have shown me the sphere of this inconceivable enlightening liberation. Tell me, what is this liberation called?" And she answered, "This liberation is called made of roots of goodness, fostering the development of all beings. I manifest different bodies of many appearances, of varying appearances, of non-varying, undifferentiated appearance, neither colored nor colorless, of many appearances, infinite appearances, pure appearance, appearing to emanate all sorts of supernal manifestations, appearing to be visible everywhere, appearing to be the same as all beings, transcendent appearance, manifest to all beings, appearance of light reflected everywhere, non-offensive appearance, appearance beatified with the marks of embellishments of greatness, that's appearance beautified with the marks and embellishments of greatness, appearance resplendent with impeccable behavior, appearance manifest in the exertions of great power, appearance of unapproachable profundity, appearance of unsurpassed in all, appearance unsurpassed in all worlds, appearance varying from moment to moment, appearance manifesting multitudes of different forms, appearance of various physical forms, appearance manifesting infinite miraculous displays, appearance as an eloquent speaker, appearance of all beautiful forms, appearance adapted to development of all beings, appearance of consummate good manifest to those who are teachable according to their mentalities, appearance reflected everywhere without obstruction, pure, untainted, serene, radiant appearance, healthy, beautiful appearance of an indestructible body, appearance of cultivation of inconceivable spiritual methods, superlative appearance overwhelming all, appearance without darkness or obscurity, appearance dispelling all darkness, appearance imbued with all good qualities, appearance of an ocean of virtues of a great soul, appearance attained by honoring the worthy in the past, appearance of supreme vastness of a mind clear as the sky, appearance revealing the ocean of indestructible, inexhaustible virtues, appearance free from all worldly attachments, appearance freely pervading everywhere, appearance instantly manifesting a multitude of different appearances in untold myriads of realms, appearance increasing floods of great joy in all sentient beings, appearance to protect all beings, appearance emanating multitudes of manifestations of all virtues of Buddhahood from every pore, appearance purifying the wills and aspirations of all sentient beings, appearance showing determination of the meanings of all spiritual teachings, appearance radiating a network of very colored lights, appearance of pure light as vast as the sky, appearance contained in the light of the untainted essence of pure jewels, appearance reflecting the undefiled real nature of things, incomparable appearance of reflecting the variety of the ocean of means of liberation, appearance of ubiquitous light, appearance manifest to the world according to the time without fragmentation, appearance originating in the realm of tranquility and restraint, appearance quelling all afflictions, appearance revealing in a field of blessing for all sentient beings, appearance producing calm by all means, appearance fruitfully manifest throughout the world, appearance revealing the exertion of great knowledge, appearance of an unobstructed, all-pervasive body, appearance of a universally supreme body, and so on. I'm skipping. The bottom of the facing page. Thus, based on this enlightening liberation, fostering roots of goodness according to sentient beings' mentality for their development, realizing the undifferentiated essence of reality, manifesting an infinite variety of physical forms, this means that basically, logically, we would be those physical forms, right? Because if it's infinite physical forms, every physical form would be a manifestation. So that means we must be, right? Who knew? Right? We would be those manifestations, yeah. Projecting visions of an infinite variety of multitudes of appearances from each body representing practices, and goes on, with all this, I verify past roots of goodness, develop new roots of goodness, increase existing roots of goodness. By the way, in Buddhism, it is totally axiomatic that if we're here in this world, in a physical human body, listening to the Dharma, that means absolutely for sure that in the long ago distant past, we were really, really great people. Because otherwise, we would not have achieved this state, right? This is a very auspicious situation that we're in. And you wouldn't be in it, because we could be in hell, we could be, you know, all kinds of really bad situations in the cosmos. But we're in a very good one. And that shows that we have roots of good. So she's saying that those who already have roots of goodness, like us, she will develop them further. And in each mental moment, I establish infinite beings in the stage of non-regression. she is, this is the stage where you cannot go backwards. You're only going forwards. Where they will not retreat, advancing towards supreme perfect enlightenment. And then she said, and you asked me also, Sudhana, you asked me how long ago I set out for supreme enlightenment. And I will tell you this, too, by the power of the Buddha. The sphere of knowledge of enlightening beings is not in the realm of thought, conception, or imagination. It cannot be known in terms of length or brevity of life, or in terms of defilement or purity of ages, or in terms of brevity or length of ages, or in terms of multitude or variety of ages. Ages here means like eons, you know, different cosmic ages. Or in terms of brevity or length of ages, or in terms of multitude or variety of ages, or in terms of variation or differentiation of ages. Why? Because the sphere of knowledge of enlightening beings is utterly pure in its essential nature. It is outside the net of all conceptions. It is beyond the mountains of all obstructions. It appears in the mind and sheds light on all beings who can be guided according to their mentalities when the time is ripe for their development. It's like the sun. There is no reckoning of the day and night on the sun, right? There's no day and night on the sun. But when the sun has gone down, we call it night. And when the sun comes up, we call it day. In the same way, in the non-conceptual sphere of knowledge of enlightening beings, there are no thoughts or conceptions or imaginations or notions of cycle or duration or time frames. Skipping to the next paragraph, it's like the orb of the sun in the sky. It is perceived, reflected in all jewel mountains and all jewel trees and all jewels and all jewel treasuries and all oceans and so on and so on. But it does not enter the jewel trees or particles. It's not in the crystals. It doesn't come to the jewel treasuries. It doesn't enter the ocean. It doesn't enter any bodies of water. Yet it is seen within them all. Just as a boatman, skipping another paragraph, just as a boatman is always at work on the rivers to ferry people over, never ceasing, all their life, never dwelling on the near shore or on the farther shore, the near shore being samsara, the farther shore being nirvana, never dwelling on the near shore or on the far shore, and not remaining in midstream either, in the same way, the enlightening being undertakes to save sentient beings from the current of the mundane whirl by the power of the boat of the transcendent ways, the paramitas. The enlightening being does not fear the near shore, does not think of the farther shore as safety, and yet is always engaged in ferrying sentient beings over. Just as space, extensive as the cosmos, is without discrimination, whether worlds become, decay, or disappear, is by nature pure, undefiled, neither turning back nor tiring, not long or short, eternally supporting all lands. In the same way, the space of the will and knowledge of the enlightening beings with the whirlwind of great vows never tires in keeping sentient beings from falling into all states of misery. So, you know, saying like this is a force, like space, you know, nobody knows what space is. Like, is it a thing? Does it exist? But yet it's fundamental. The sutra is saying that awakening beings and awakening is that. It's a force in the universe. It's an actual thing, just like space. Just as a magically produced person has all their limbs and body parts, but lacks 10 physical elements, inhalation and exhalation, coolness and warmth, hunger and thirst, joy and sorrow, pains of birth, old age, sickness and death. In the same way, in the enlightening being whose form is born of the magic of knowledge, whose body is one with the cosmos, who appears in all states of existence to perfect sentient beings, who live through all 10 ages, 10 things are not to be found. Desire for the mundane world, rejection of life in the mundane world, currying of enjoyment of objects, malevolence, desire for enjoyment, the burning of afflictions, experiences of painful feelings, fear of different difficult situations, desire for existence, and attachment. And then she goes on to tell her backstory about how she got to be this goddess and all that happened in her past life, all of which I am going to skip in the interest of time and go to the beginning of the next goddess. So Tejo Mandala Ratishri. Now, the interesting thing about her is that she is not at this enlightenment place. She is in Lumbini. She's in the grove in Lumbini where Buddha was born. So this, the theme of this one is the birth of the Buddha. And she's going to retell the story of the birth of the Buddha only in this cosmic realm bathed in light. So Sudana goes to the Lumbini grove and he sees her. And she talks about 10 kinds of birth. And then she goes back and explains each one of those 10. And then 1384. And then she speaks about a page of verses, so you can find those verses. And then she talks about her liberation. I have attained an enlightening liberation, a vision of the birth of enlightening beings in all objects for incalculable eons. A vision of the birth of enlightening beings in all objects. So now we're not talking about people, we're talking about physical objects. Objects are alive, they've been born as enlightening beings, you know. Like, did you have a soft-boiled egg for breakfast? You know this. It was a bodhisattva, an enlightening being that was gifted to you by this goddess. And she talks about the 10 good omens in the Lumbini Grove. And then she says that when Lady Maya, the mother of Vairochana Buddha, and here, I don't know what it says in the original text, but Thomas Cleary makes clear that in this text, Vairochana Buddha, who is the cosmic Buddha, is conflated with Shakyamuni Buddha, the historical Buddha. So Lady Maya gave birth to Vairochana / Shakyamuni Buddha. 10 omens of great light appeared in this Lumbini grove when she gave birth. What were the 10? Light appeared in the chambers of all the jewel towers on the ground level. Light appeared in the buds of all the fragrant flowers. Light appeared in the blossoming buds of all the jewel lotuses, coming from all the petals, and sweet, agreeable sound flowed from them. Also, the light of the first inspiration of the enlightening beings of the 10 directions appeared, illuminating this Lumbini grove. Also, the mystical manifestation of light of the enlightening beings of the 10 directions entered all the stages of enlightening beings appeared in this, entering all the stages of enlightening beings appeared in this grove. Then as Lady Maya, skipping to the next paragraph, then as Lady Maya leaned against the holy fig tree all to give birth, all the world rulers, the gods and goddesses of the realm of desire, the gods and goddesses of the realm of form, and all the other beings who had gathered there to make offerings to the enlightened being were bathed in the glorious radiance of Maya's body. And their arrays of offerings were also illuminated thereby. And then, finally, this is the end. On the next page, paragraph at the bottom of the page, after these 10 miracles had appeared, the enlightening being manifesting in a fusion, and this is the Buddha being born, the enlightening being, because the Buddha is an enlightening being at this point. He's not yet Buddha, right? He's an enlightening being. He's a bodhisattva. After these 10 miracles had appeared, the enlightening being manifesting in a fusion of inconceivable, measureless light emerged from Lady Maya's abdomen like the sun from the horizon, like lightning from the clouds, like the diffusion of the dawn of the mountains, like a great torch from the darkness. Thus did the enlightening being manifest emergence from the abdomen of Lady Maya. By the nature of manifestation of illusory form, by the nature of non-coming, by the nature of manifestation of appearance to the world without origin or extinction. So, thank you. Let's take just a minute or two to digest all that, and then we'll hear some more, okay? Okay, let's take a minute. Just let all that sink in, if you can, or we already know that we can't think about it, we can't conceive of it, but we can somehow feel it on our skin, feel it in the pores of our body, feel it in the circulation of our blood and of our breath. Okay, let's hear a little more. Suzanne, do you want to start?
Sure. Now,
how about the mic? What do we do with will this mic pick up? We'll use them. We'll give her a hand mic. Okay. Great.
Now, I was going to have read about Maya Devi.
Yeah.
A little farther on.
Go ahead. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, good.
Someone has just sprung forth from her abdomen.
Yeah. Good.
Okay, good.
They say abdomen. I don't know what the sutra says, you know. I mean, maybe I don't think that we know that the Buddha was born by cesarean section. I don't think so. So I don't know whether who's using a euphemism there. I don't know whether it's the sutra or Cleary or
we'll
what.
We'll have to go back.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
So I'll just bounce around a little bit. It's like pin the tail on the donkey. You could just start anywhere.
Yes.
Okay. So now we've been introduced to Maya Devi. She said, as Sudhana has met her, I have attained an enlightening liberation, quote, magical manifestation of knowledge of great vows, unquote. Imbued with this liberation, I am the mother of all the enlightening beings in their final existence in all the worlds of this world ocean where Vairochana Buddha's miraculous manifestation of birth as an enlightening being in the final existence takes place. All those enlightening beings grow in my belly and come forth from my right side. So here too, in this great city of Kapilavastu, as wife of the king, Suddhodana, I became the mother of the enlightening being Siddhartha by the great inconceivable miracle of the birth of the enlightening being. I'm going to race ahead and just capture. Just as I received the enlightening being in my belly in this world, I'm on page 1437, mid page. Just as I received the enlightening being in my belly in this world, so did I likewise do so in all worlds in the billion world universe and with this same miraculous manifestation. Yet this body of mine is neither dual nor non-dual, neither single nor multiple. This is because of the development of this enlightening liberation of the magic of knowledge of great vows. And just as I was the mother of this Buddha Vairochana, so was I the mother of infinite Buddhas before. Whenever an enlightening being was spontaneously born in the calyx of a lotus, there I became a lotus pond goddess and received the enlightening being. And the world recognized me as the progenitrix of the enlightening being. In whatever Buddha land an enlightening being appeared, I became an enlightenment sight goddess there. Thus, in whatever ways enlightening beings manifested birth in the world in their final existence, in so many ways did I become the mother of the enlightening beings.
And do you want to say why you chose that passage or what you see in it?
Partly because I've spent a lot of time in Kapilavasti, so I don't like anything about Kapilavasti.
It's kind of like home. Yeah.
It feels like home. And just the phantasmagorical way of her seeing herself in all and all in herself and her as the origin of all enlightening beings. It's just beautiful.
I wonder, now that you say that, I wonder, could the mothers in the room give us a quick testimony? Did you all give birth to Buddhas? Did you have that feeling at the moment that you gave birth? Did you feel that? Yeah. No? You say, some yes, some no. Yeah, I would think that this would be a very special occasion, right? Giving birth, and that the person that you gave birth to would be not an ordinary person, right? I wouldn't think so. Yeah, okay, let's see. Michael, you want to read?
I think Marianne has a selection that's...
Okay, Marianne could go next, yeah.
Okay, well, this is from the... this is from the part about the Shakyan girl, Gopa. I'm just going to start at a place and read through to where I wish to end. Then Sudana went up to Gopa, paid his respects, and said, "I have set my mind on supreme perfect enlightenment, but I do not know how enlightening beings act in the midst of the mundane world without being stained by its ills, how they realize the equal essence of all phenomena without staying in the stage of personal liberation alone, how they manifest the qualities of Buddhas without stopping the practice of enlightening beings, how they remain in the stage of enlightening beings yet show the sphere of all Buddhas, how they transcend all worldly states yet act in the midst of worldly states, how they achieve the reality body yet produce endless physical manifestations, how they resort to the formless reality body, yet manifest bodies like all beings, how they comprehend all the inexpressible truths, yet expound the truths to sentient beings in all languages, how they know there are no beings in the elements of existence, yet do not give up efforts to guide all beings, how they realize all phenomena are unoriginated and unperishing, yet do not give up the effort to serve all Buddhas, how they realize there are no results of action in phenomena, yet do not give up the effort to perform good deeds. Gopa said to Sudana, "It is very good that you think it fit to ask about the nature of this kind of practice of enlightening beings, as this is the question of one who is set on practicing the vow of universal good. So listen well and think carefully, for I will tell you by the power of Buddha. There are 10 things by which enlightening beings fulfill this kind of enlightening practice. The light of total knowledge, like the cosmic net of interrelation of all things. What are the ten? Association with superior spiritual friends, attainment of enormous devotion, purity of lofty goodwill, a state of mind founded on oceanic virtue and knowledge, listening to the great teaching of Buddhas, associating with thought devoted to the Buddhas of past, present, and future, equally following the practices of all enlightening beings, gaining the empowerment of all Buddhas, purity of intent, greatly compassionate in nature, attainment of the basic power of mind to stop all vicious circles. Having attained these 10 things, enlightening beings fulfill this kind of enlightening practice, like the cosmic net of interrelation of all things, radiating total knowledge. Then, enlightening beings with unrelenting vigor, having attained these things, developing and expanding them by putting them into practice in endless ways, propitiate spiritual benefactors in 10 ways. By indifference to themselves, by not seeking worldly goods, by realizing the equality of essence of all things, by not turning back from commitment to omniscience, by observing all the principles of the cosmos, by being mentally free of all existence, by independence in the space of truth where there is nothing to depend on, by freedom from obstruction in the undertaking of all enlightening beings, by entering all lands, by perfect clarification and purification of the unobstructed sphere of knowledge of enlightening beings. Then, by the empowerment of Buddha, looking over the 10 directions, Gopa uttered these verses illustrating what she meant. I could read them, or is that enough? I don't know how much you can take.
Read a little more. Yeah.
I'll read the verses. That's what I was going to do. Those who set out for vast, pure wisdom, for the welfare of others, and serve true benefactors honestly with tireless vigor, seeing them as teachers, carry out practice in the world like the cosmic net. Those whose devotion is vast as the sky, embracing all worlds of past, present, and future, all lands, beings, phenomena, and Buddhas, theirs is this practice, producers of the light of knowledge. When the will is infinite as the sky, supremely pure, free from the taint of afflictions, therein arises the virtues of all Buddhas. Concentrating the whole variety of the cosmic net of practice, the wise who rest on great oceans of virtue, inconceivable, infinite, vast as omniscience, as pure offspring of the body of all virtues, they act in the world unstained by the filth of the world. Those who listen to the teaching of Buddhas and tirelessly catch every nuance are lamps shining with wisdom in accord with truth. Theirs is this practice which lights the world. Those who perceive in an instant of awareness the infinite Buddhas everywhere, interrelated, contemplate the ocean of all Buddhas. This is the way into the mind of the enlightened. Those who see the vast audiences of the Buddhas enter the ocean of their meditations and their infinite ocean of vows. This is the practice of those like the cosmic net. Those empowered by all the Buddhas practice universal good for endless ages, reflected in all lands. This is the practice of the lights of truth. The sons of compassion and knowledge emerge steadfast, seeing the misfortune of the world, and disperse the darkness of delusion with the light of truth. This is the practice of those like the sun. Seeing people revolve in the rut of existence, the wise stand opposed to the flow of the mundane world. Developing the measureless wheel of true teaching, they practice universal higher goodness and wisdom. Those who learn these infinite principles appearing in the world according to people's mentalities, with their own bodies like reflected images, develop people in the oceans of being, suffusing the world with myriad expressions of love, showing spiritual practice to people of various interests, teaching them, according to their mentalities, the steadfast lead billions to enlightenment. Then Gopa said to Sudana, I have attained an enlightening liberation whose sphere is observation of the ocean of concentration of all enlightening beings.
Mm. So, thank you. You want to say something about it, what you were thinking?
I just liked it. Because, well, one, it talked about, you know, the cosmic net, you know, and the interrelation of everything, and also about devotion. And it also seemed to lay out kind of some practical things to aspire to or to try to cultivate in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, when I was reading last night, this was what I landed on.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks. Beautifully read, yeah. Michael, going to go next?
So after the section that Marianne just read, Sudana asks Gopa, how long ago did you attain this liberation? And she launches into this story about a world called, the world where there's no fearfulness, or says something like that, I don't remember exactly. And she launches into this long story about a prince and a maid who go on a journey looking for Buddha in that world. And that's where this part that I'm going to read occurs. Just going to make it a little larger so I can see. Then the prince and the maid with her retinue of 20,000 girls left the park and went to the site of enlightenment where the Buddha was to see, pay respects, to make offerings, and attend the Buddha. Going by vehicle, as far as the vehicle would go, the prince got off the vehicle and approached the Buddha on foot. Even at a distance, he saw that the Buddha was serene, a sight to behold, senses tranquil, mind quiet, senses under control, like a tame elephant, his heart like a clear, still pond. When he saw the Buddha, the prince's mind became settled, and with a clear mind, he developed great joy, well-being, and energy that derives from seeing a Buddha. With his mind full of great joy, energy, serenity, and rapture, he paid his respects to the Buddha, and together with the whole company, including the young woman, covered the Buddha with 500,000 great jewel lotuses, and made 500 sanctuaries of jewels for the Buddha and adorned each one with 500,000 diamonds. Then the Buddha, knowing the prince's strong determination, expounded a scripture called the lamp at the door of the universal eye, upon hearing which the prince attained 10 oceans of concentration absorbed in all principles of the teaching. He attained ways of concentration such as those called light produced from the ocean of vows of all Buddhas, path of illumination of past, present, and future, going forth into the circle of all Buddhas, entry into the highest range of awareness of all beings, and so on. The young woman attained a meditation called filled with an ocean of invincible knowledge and became irreversible in progress towards supreme perfect enlightenment. Then the prince, paying respects to the Buddha, left the presence of the Buddha with the young woman and the rest of the company and went to his father, the king, in the city. greeting the king respectfully, he informed him that the Buddha, Supreme Son, had appeared in the world and was staying, and was staying in the king's realm, having recently attained enlightenment. The king then asked the prince who had told him so, and he replied that it had been the young woman, Splendor of Delight in Virtuous Conduct. Then the king, hearing of the emergence of the Buddha, felt that he had gained a great treasure, felt that he had found the rare jewel of Buddha. He considered the sight of a Buddha to be the end of the danger of falling into evil ways. He felt he had found a great physician who could heal all affliction. He thought of the Buddha as a liberator from all the sufferings of the mundane world, as one who leads to ultimate peace and felicity, as one who reveals the unobscured light of knowledge. He thought of the Buddha as the appearance of a great torch dispelling the darkness of ignorance, and felt that he had found a spiritual guide for a world with no guide, thinking of the Buddha as a leader to omniscience for the leaderless. Hearing of the emergence of the Buddha with great joy, the king, Lord of Wealth, gathered together all the warriors, priests, ministers, family priests, princes and governors, as well as the gatekeepers and courtiers, and abdicated the throne in favor of his son, Lord of Glory, who had brought the joyous news of the appearance of the Buddha. Then, having crowned the prince as king, he went together with 10,000 people to the Buddha, paid his respects, and sat with his retinue before the Buddha. Shall I go on? Then the Buddha, looking at the king and the whole assembly, emitted a light from the curl of hair between his brows, a light called Lamp of the Minds of All Beings, which illumined all worlds in the 10 directions, then stopped in front of the world leaders, displayed inconceivable Buddha projections, clarified the minds of those beings who could be taught by the Buddha, and then, by the inconceivable mastery of Buddha, by means of embodiment of Buddha appearing in all worlds, speaking all languages in the voice of Buddha, expounded a medium of mental command called Unshaded Lamp of Meaning of All Things, which was accompanied by as many media of mental command as atoms in a Buddha land. The king, Lord of Wealth, hearing of this medium of mental command, gained an immense spiritual perspective on all things. As many enlightened beings as there are atoms in a continent attained the mental command of the unshaded lamp of meaning of all things. 60 million people, freed from contaminants, were mentally liberated. 10,000 people became dispassionate and untainted, and their objective vision of things was clarified. An immense number aspired to supreme perfect enlightenment for the first time. Infinitely many beings in 10 directions, by seeing the inconceivable mystic displays projected by the Buddha, reached liberation by way of the three vehicles. And then this is near the end of this section. The king, Lord of Wealth, having gained great illumination from the teaching, thought, I cannot apply myself assiduously to such a teaching or accomplish such knowledge while living at home. Let me leave home to be with the Buddha. Then he told the Buddha he wanted to receive the precepts from the Buddha and leave home to become a mendicant. The Buddha assented to this. So then the king and 10,000 of his people left home to follow the Buddha.
Wonderful. You want to say something about that passage?
Well, I kind of like it because it moves the story along.
The mic. Hello. Use the mic, Michael.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. It moves the story along in this way. A lot of parts of this sutra don't, they're not
Right. That's true, yeah.
But mostly it's so moving, you hear that, the prince goes, tells his father, the king is so moved that he, the king himself leaves home.
Yes, wonderful, wonderful. Thanks. And Laura, are you going to read? You have something?
Yes, but I know it's coming.
Oh, you have, somebody has something? Yeah, okay.
I haven't picked a passage. Which one would I just read?
Well,
do you want to continue from where I was?
Sure, I mean, unless, because you said several pages.
Oh, I see. Well, maybe Michael can give you a passage, a page to read there. Why don't you find a verse section? Because the verse sections we haven't been reading much, and they're nice. Meryl, did you get the email? I was wondering if you, maybe, are you gone, Meryl? Are you still there? Maybe Meryl is there, yeah. Did you get my email asking you to read? I guess you did it. Yeah, you mustn't, because you didn't answer me, so I figured you didn't get it, yeah. Okay.
No, I didn't get it.
That's okay. 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 So this will be the last one then. And she needs to have a microphone up to her mouth, yeah. Okay, she has the mic. Okay, good.
Then, by the empowerment of Buddha, Gopa spoke these verses, illustrating this way of liberation. Those who see the best of people engaged in the practice of perfect enlightenment, all go to join him, be they friendly or inimical.
Can you hold them any little closer?
I remember.
Yeah, better, yeah.
As many eons as there are atoms in 100 lands, there was an excellent world of outstanding light with an age of supreme magnificence. In that age, in that world, were 60 decillion Buddhas. The last of them, best of sages, was a lamp of the world, spiritual paragon. At the time of that Buddha's demise, there was a glorious king who had conquered all enemies, a king of kings with unobstructed knowledge. He had 500 sons who were heroic, brave, and handsome, physically perfect and pure, adorned with unexcelled splendor. The king and his sons had faith in Buddha and made great offerings to the enlightened. They always followed the true teaching and were unshakable in application of its practice. The king had a brilliant son, a pure being, adorned with the 32 marks of a great man. Giving up his kingship, he left home together with 5 million people. Having gone forth, he worked with firmness and energy to preserve the teaching of the Buddha. There was a city full of trees, best of a billion cities. There was a forest there of various trees, quiet and most beautiful. There the king's son sojourned. Experienced, intelligent, clear-minded, he elucidated the Buddha's teaching to purify the spirit of defiled beings. Gathering wise people, he entered the city composed of noble mien and serene appearance, his gaze steady, mindful, aware, his action profound, walking steadily. There was an excellent town, Banner of Joy, as a grandee there named Resounding Fame, I was his beloved daughter, named Shining Light, more beautiful. I saw the Shining Prince and his retinue as I stood in the door of my house. He was handsome with the marks of greatness, and I became very happy on seeing him. When he passed my door, I put a pearl in his bowl. Then taking off all my jewelry, full of love, I gave it to him. With an impassioned heart, I made a gift to that enlightening being, and for 250 eons did not fall into evil states. And on and on.
Yeah. All of that was great. Thank you, everybody, for choosing passages and reading them. It was really pretty great. But that was all preparation for our ceremony. For Sue. In order to do this ceremony, Sue has to go over and sit on the couch by Robin. So this is a very, very simple ceremony. Here's the way it goes. I brought some special incense. Oh, there's nowhere to put it. So I won't use the incense, but I'll bless the Rakusu over at the altar. And then I'm going to give the Rakusu to Steve. And then Steve is going to bless the Rakusu by just holding it up like this. And he's going to pass it on to Jeff. And Jeff's going to do the same thing. And everybody's going to do the same thing. Everybody, we're going to go just send the Rakusu all around the room, make sure everybody gets a chance to hold it and bless it. And then they're going to give it to the last, whoever is the last one is going to give it to Robin. And then Robin is going to stand up and or not and bow to Sue and ceremonially give it to Sue. And Sue is going to receive it. And then she's going to take it out of the envelope and she's going to put it on her head. And all together in a resounding voice full of joy and the desire to benefit all beings, we're all going to chant the robe chant. And then Sue's going to put her robe on, her Rakusu on. And after she puts her Rakusu on, especially those who were sewing. I don't know if Ren is on the here, but Ren was helping to sew, and Pearl was helping to sew, and Jeff was helping. Especially the people who were helping to sew should stand up and celebrate Sue and congratulate her. And then after that's done, Sue will have the last word. And then after that, we will chant the refuges and leave and never come back. Yeah.
Can you tell us why she's getting a Rakusu at this point?
Recording stopped.
She is getting a Rakusu now because her old one is wearing out. And the reason